Hello, listeners, and welcome to this new episode of Your B-Side, the podcast that will tell us more today about our guest, Raphael. Hey, Raphael, welcome.
Hey, how's it going?
Good, and you?
I'm doing really well. Almost springtime.
Almost springtime. Enjoying this in Montreal, where we both are, actually. So thanks, Raphael, for joining. And as you know, in this podcast, we're going to start with your A-side, which is your company and your role within this company. And after that, obviously, we're going to switch to your B-side. So let's go.
Let's go. So, my A-side is what I talk about every day, almost all the time. So it's pretty simple. So Raphael Steinman, I'm a co-CEO and founder of Maxa. What does Maxa do? So we're on a mission to make ERP data friendly to people in code. So what do I mean by that? Essentially, any company who has an ERP is probably secretly complaining that their analytics and their ability to get any form of insights is actually either overwhelming, a struggle, or just plainly not fun and expensive and takes time.
Okay.
So Maxa has we've developed this amazing cloud solution that just literally automates everything.
Okay.
So imagine having an army of thousands of data analysts and FP&A analysts and to produce all the insights. Well, now you do have that army, except it's just power of the cloud doing it.
By a tool.
No human beings, just machines.
Perfect. So to know more about your company, maxa.ai, right?
Exactly.
Perfect.
Exactly.
Great. Thanks, Raphael. We'll switch to your B-side now, and we're going to start with sports. So what sports do you practice? You like watching, etc.?
So I guess the sports I like practicing. So my story, the sports I like practicing are all the sports that I used to do a lot before having kids.
Yeah.
And then I tried. Then there's sports sometimes I still do in my head, and I actually don't have the time to do. But secretly, I'm gradually coming back. So I mean, I'm a really avid downhill skier, alpine skiing.
Okay.
I mean, that's if I had to say if I have one thing in my life that I'm actually naturally extremely good at and I really enjoy, and it's downhill skiing. I love it. It's the one sport that I get in the zone immediately, and I can ski forever. And specifically, as I was getting a little older, I'm secretly one that probably would have loved to do World Cup racing in a younger life, but I discovered it earlier. So maybe, so I'm 46, probably between 34 and 40, I did a lot of amateur, we'll call it, a slalom and the Super G.
Okay.
And that's just so fun. It's like going down a racetrack, except on skis. That's what it is.
That's good. Good, good. And we have plenty of places here in Canada to do that, and even back in France, because I think you have strong ties with France as well, right?
My lineage is not from France, but in my previous lives, I used to have my ex-business partner was French, and I had actually even in Maxa, a lot of our employees are also French. So yes, I seem to have a gravity pull to French people and France. Exactly.
Sounds good. And you're enjoying a new sport since you've been a father, because being a parent is a great sport as well, right?
So exactly. So I used to cycle a lot. So ski during the winter, cycle during the summer.
Yep.
And then, well, with the pandemic and the new kid, well, cycling becomes spinning at home. and then underneath all that, of course, when I used to cycle, I used to do a lot of it because I had a lot of time. And then I hit this sort of wall, this performance wall. And there's somebody who told me, I was trying to get as a 30-year-old, I was trying to go, I saw people blow by me about 40 kilometers an hour. I was trying, how do I get to that performance? And somebody told me that it's actually someone's flexibility and core. That was the main elements, just flexibility, because if you are at the maximum bend of your muscles, you actually are probably using 20% of their power. So if you're not using your maximum, which means you're very flexible and you actually lose a lot more of your muscle fiber. So back then, I'm the proof that anybody can become very flexible, because I was literally cannot even bend over, touch my toes. So long story short, started doing Pilates massively, like three times a week, private trainer to really, really, to really push. And it actually works. So since then, I've been literally probably since I'm 33, maybe, been doing Pilates forever. It actually probably protected me from back injuries. At 46, I'm pretty happy to have done that all my time. And it's actually very good for skiing and all core, just like any sport that you need to be like rock solid and sort of a good center of gravity. It really helps.
Great.
So I guess, though.
Yeah.
And then my joke is that my favorite sport now is sleep.
I sleep. That's a good one as well. Very resting. Sounds good. So sleep maybe while watching movies. So what kind of what's your favorite movie, for example?
As any kid, I mean, the problem movies that if you ask me what movie have I seen a lot the most and I enjoyed,
yeah,
was everything to do. I mean, the whole Star Wars, yeah, film series, everything, yeah, yeah. And probably the one that like anybody around my age, I mean, they'll probably say Return of the Jedi because they were at that age where they're super impressed. You can be impressed by a lot of things, and Star Wars was the first like world where you really like, oh, you start imagining. And I think Return of the Jedi is lightsabers and the Force and everything. It's something that even now is still even as we in my prison company, like we have Jedi references and we have you using the Force and what's your plan? Attack the Death Star. That's my plan.
Yeah.
So anyway, so
and thanks to Disney, it will keep going on forever. It looks like it.
Exactly.
So, and that was my next question to you regarding TV series. I think it has to deal with Star Wars as well, right?
Yeah. Well, actually, what I'm actually watching or finishing to watch is actually The Mandalorian.
Yeah.
Which is sort of an interesting. It's probably one of the most interesting spin-offs because it's one little character that you sort of see gravitating around the earlier, yeah, Star Wars trilogies, and it's actually you realize that this is probably a part of it that could have really been exploded with a lot more depth because there's the whole Mandalorians themselves, if you like their values and like their catchphrase, this is the way and how they live. Like it's, yeah, actually some very like really powerful culture values and how to live life and sort of as a community society. And it's actually super interesting.
Cool. Let's switch to music now. What band can you recommend to our
So audience? So again, in my past life, I was a huge, there was a time, or maybe because I'm old, so I'm not up to date, but there was a time which what we call the Montreal electro sound. It was this in the electro techno music or whatever, yeah, we want to call it. Montreal, there was a lot of world-class DJs just, yeah, sprouting out of Montreal. And if you went out to bars, like there was this Montreal electro sound. And if you bring all that together, I think there's one band DJ group, I mean, they're a duo, they're called Le Matos,
okay,
which I find are actually the epitome of all that sound that is still relevant and still good. So if you listen to the tracks I listen to when I spin, when I run, or when I actually have to plow through as little background, there's Le Matos comes a lot.
Okay.
A lot. So I mean, if somebody wants to know, do you like electro and does the Montreal sound reverberate with me? Just listen to the Matos. They have some pretty, really, really creative,
okay,
unique, I guess, sounds in the way of blending electro music.
I'll have a look, really, actually. I'll have an ear because I am not aware. I don't know Le Matos, so I'll have a, yeah, I'll listen to it on Spotify then. Sounds good. Any book you're currently reading or you've just finished reading?
There's a book that I'm trying to finish,
yeah,
and it's Why Greatness Cannot Be Planned. And the reason why is like I have two ways of reading. I have one where like it's deep, knowledgeable, great insights where you have to be super awake. And I have like I literally read books about spies and things like that, just literally to turn off the brain. I usually read three pages and fall asleep. So that's sort of my balance. So like I reserve the ones where I have a little more time to read. And I guess why am I reading this book? I think with the advent of AI, I mean, I'll give you the gist of it. With the advent of AI, with the advent of the ability maybe to gather a little more data on samples, and they're asking themselves the question, is innovation something that comes out of iterations?
Yeah.
Or is innovation something that is sort of emerges out of nowhere, lack of better words. Like it's not something that can be planned or can be strategically organized to get to,
yeah,
or rationally organized. Let me put it that way. And what it seems to be like the overarching thing is there seems to be starting to be proof that innovation is not something that is iterative.
Yeah.
It's something that emerges sort of out of chaos, for lack of a better word. So it's almost you have to descend into chaos and then you rise back, and rising back, if you're able to, because sometimes you do not rise back. Sort of the story of any startup, you descend into, yeah, chaos and you pray God you'll be able to reemerge into something that is,
else, yeah,
that is viable. And usually every startup has that story where you start with something and you end up being something else that's what works,
yeah,
or actually is. And it's really the, I guess, the rational proof with sampling with and like you look at all, they go back in time, like all the massive innovations or things like that, it has all to do with descent into chaos and coming back. And the thesis is, be careful of the goals you set, because sometimes setting too structured goals does not allow you. You focus so hard on getting to those goals that you don't give yourself the opportunity to go into chaos, actually, and to emerge, because you're angled and you're KPIing yourself and you're measuring success not on innovating and ending up somewhere that is valuable, high value, but achieving what you set at the beginning, which may not be, as we know, in startups, what you set at the beginning is not necessarily the real life target that you end up working with or that is successful. So I think that is interesting, because it goes a little bit counter of what we think, and the way we plan is to realizing to be very careful about the grand objectives that we give ourselves. Maybe give ourselves directions, but allowing yourselves to be in also that chaos. Like it's a normal part of creation or innovation is to be at a part where I like to say at Maxa, the right position we should be into is 1 foot in order, 1 foot in chaos.
Yeah.
And if you do not feel that sort of tension between the two, you're either too conservative, or if you're both feet in chaos, you probably should raise your hand and someone will bring you back, at least have some grounding. And it's that recognizing that you're in that zone and you have to be okay with it, and just allowing you to live that zone. And that's when usually the great stuff emerges.
Yeah.
It's sort of interesting. So you bring that back. So that's at maybe at the more company level. But if you go back to like personal levels, like our kids, like my oldest daughter who's turning 6, she loves arts and crafts. It's like the amount of, excuse my language, like crap that she produces is like, it's amazing. Like it's coming from, and it's like, she'll start and not even know what she'll finish with. And it's like, it's amazing. There's these rainbows, you see evolution, you see, and it's like, wow, kids have that naturally. And it's like, okay, how can we, like, I'm trying to figure out, like, how do I set up the environment around her so that she does not lose that little connectivity with ability to go down into unstructured world and emerge with, like, naturally emerge with other things that hadn't, you never set out to do that, but it's really, really great what you're doing. And suddenly she'll find a theme with little eyeballs, and for the next week she'll be doing eyeballs, but like, you didn't really realize that was going to be used for that, and continue on.
Okay. So that's all. That was linked to the books that you mentioned, right? So greatness cannot be planned. That's the one.
Exactly. Okay. And it's super interesting, because it's literally data back. Like, it's a guy who starts with like AI, evolutive AI, where he's looking at how AI models evolve. And then, so when he focuses too hard the AI and a forcing function to optimize to get somewhere, after 36,000 generations, he's still like half of the way to get there. And then if you just gives AI very loose and just like, well, just go at it and try to whatever, optimize to go semi in that direction. Instead of like 36,000, 80 generations later, he's like 1 centimeter from the goal.
Yeah.
And like, and trying to figure out like, why did that very loose version end up going faster than the super hard concrete, which we think of like point in that direction, optimize, be very, is not even close and has like cycle like there's no tomorrow. It's very interesting as a...
Yeah. So to your point, planning things, yes, but also letting things go into chaos so you can learn from that and resurrect and adapt, basically.
Exactly.
Okay.
And be careful to the goals that you set, because sometimes they structure you so hard that they don't allow you to innovate.
Great. We're going to stay on this specific line and move to the next segment, basically, because there's a lot of food for thought, obviously, in these books that you were sharing. We're going to travel now, Raphael, with you. So you wanted to mention one memorable trip you've done. It was, I think, in Indonesia, right?
So it's actually interesting. I didn't think of it as a theme back to back with the book. But
yeah.
So Indonesia was the first trip I did with my now life partner.
Yeah.
But it was the first time we went for 3 weeks. So it was like, actually, it was the first time in my life I took 4 weeks of back-to-back vacation. That'd be like 13 years ago or 12 years ago. Anyways, and it's very simple. We went to Indonesia. We had a ticket to fly to Indonesia.
Yeah.
And we had a ticket to fly out. And that was it. So if you do parallel with the book, like descent into chaos, and then we know when you're going to come out, but between, and it was probably, if we had planned it, we got access to things because we were just running off last minute, just being very opportunistic, meeting people, asking them what we were doing.
Yeah.
So we zigzagged from going literally to 6-star hotels to like beach little huts to come back to, and then like, oh, by the way, the only room that we have is this villa with the view on the volcano, but we know you're backpackers, and because you came back last time here, we'll give it to you for the same price of the hut. Like these really weird little things that sort of happen just by you're there and you're just seizing the moment and living, like not really caring, not looking to optimize or just like, let's just move. It was amazing.
Okay. So
it's also when you discover with your life partner, like if you can do that for four weeks flat and there's like no issues and you're both in the moment and you're like in sync and there's not, you're like, hey, there's probably something more to this than just like a vacation partner. Like we're actually really in sync, even in the tough moments. Like sometimes like the first night we arrived and we technically had a hotel for the first night.
Yeah.
Except we discovered that the hotel that we booked did not exist.
Oh my gosh. So
you end up on the sleep because you had the flight the next morning to go somewhere else. So you end up sleeping on bench parks and like that. Just interesting little looking back. It was actually very fun because once we committed, like, okay, we're not going to sleep or sleep. We're going to just rest there. We actually had fun. And that's probably one of the best. I mean, now we still talk about it. Like it's still super vivid in our minds. Like every day was like sort of an adventure. And
it marks your life as a couple now. She was the one as well to you wanted to spend more time with. So good.
Exactly.
And yeah, it's a good transition to the next segment because they wanted to talk about a memorable moment of your life, basically that had an impact. And I think you mentioned her earlier in the episode, but your first daughter, right?
Yeah. So I had my kids maybe a little later. So my first daughter I had when I turned 40.
Yeah.
And which is, the fun thing when you have your kids later is that you probably expunged all the partying and all the stuff of your system. So like you're not, you don't feel that you're leaving anything behind. You're like, I'm really ready.
Yeah, soon.
The flip side though is that you've also built your career, you've built your way of working, you have this operation, and I like to believe that I'm a high operator or something fairly efficient and able to in my previous business and now. And the shock was, I think, just with like lack of sleep.
Yeah.
I used to be able to attend meetings, take no notes, remember everything, passwords, literally at any given time, literally go like rewind in my head, play, rewind, play. Oh, yeah. This is what we said. And like instant recall, you're running. That day she was born, lost all my memory.
Yeah.
Full stop. Yeah. Like no, I have no clue. I can't remember past. So I had to literally
adapt,
accept that this was not coming back.
Yeah.
So for a moment you become like maybe a couple of months, you actually end up not like you're really bad at work. Like you're not efficient. You're behind everybody. You're disconnected. You're not 10 steps ahead. You're 10 steps behind and relearn a completely different way of working. So it's extreme forcing. Like, okay, I'm now going to have to operate without memory. How do I do that?
Yeah.
And plus with the constraint that I can't work 80 hours a day. I can't compensate by just putting more hours in or more effort or like you can't, you're boxed and you're, because you're also not sleeping that much. Well, your box is even smaller.
Yeah.
And, so I had to completely relearn how to work. The outcome at the end, like maybe this is me probably 3 years later saying it was probably the best forcing function I've ever had in my life. And even I'm actually sometimes asking myself if I had kids earlier,
yeah,
like that may actually have at the output at the end may actually have been the better, even better. Like it taught me how to work in a completely different way. And it's like less time, more efficient. You say no to pretty much everything. You have to be a lot more focused on your goals. You can't end up doing things you shouldn't be doing. And you are so used to being in chaos that probably you're very more open to new things happening because you're not.
Yeah.
Your mind is not clear sometimes. So it's still fuzzy or that as a joke, but but that was, I remember like that transition to realizing, oh crap, like I'm not good anymore. How am I going to do this, and they like, I have no clue, and like there's a moment of fear, like maybe Rafael does not exist anymore the way he used to, and that's about it.
So the nice parallel with your Indonesian trip and the readings as well. I'd say you always mention this cow thing, so it changes basically at one moment your life, this has an impact, but you're able to resurrect from it, and as you said, that's for the better as well, because at the end you feel like you have a more healthy life and healthy work balance as well.
And the most interesting things is now, so now I have two daughters, a young, a 3-year-old and a soon to be 6-year-old. Yep. And the most interesting things out of that, and maybe to like package everything together, is like my best ideas now, or like great thoughts or themes that come up, is literally on the playground, playing with them, not thinking about work. And then suddenly it just comes out of nowhere.
Yeah.
It's you're, and then it's like, oh, okay. And then suddenly like, daddies, listen to me. I'm like, I just have to write this down, because like, this is coming from, and it's interesting. So being present and not having to deal with memory, and
yeah,
like it's not about anymore storing knowledge. It's about like connecting things together, and there's something magical about just being present, where you sort of, time stops existing and you sort of connect past, present, future, and you're just there.
Yeah.
It's I think that's what my daughter's taught me, to be a lot more connected with now than to all the other stuff flying around your head.
Which is a good transition to the next segment as well. What's your objective for the next years? If we look ahead, five to ten next years, what's on your list basically?
So I guess like, so I mean, you can say I'm a very, my passion in life, so I guess my hobby and professional life are very almost aligned. Like,
yep.
I love, it's almost like they're almost the same. With kids,
yeah.
And there's so the story started with Marie,
mm-hmm.
And now I'm actually now going back. Okay, our kids a little older, we're sleeping more.
Yeah.
Max is now at a stage where like got a fantastic team. We're not just holding it by our hands. There's a whole team behind that's actually holding it, and it's also giving trying to relearn or re-get back into the. I guess the couple that we were. So spend actually more time with Marie, just alone, like forget the kids, like going by getting out of that sort of execution mode and being a little more present as we were in the Indonesia trip, but being more present. Maybe we can't maybe go off for three, four weeks together, but be like, can we take a day off just together and go and back, enjoy. go back in that zone where we were just together without all the fluff around. And, and that's something that's top of mind. I think, if I had to say, if there's one thing that I need to optimize way better, is that, and probably that is the path for everything else to succeed.
Yeah. Okay. Great, great objective for sure. And as you know, Rafael, we're going to finish this episode by an anecdote that maybe just a few, you mentioned Mary, I'm sure she knows about it, but just a few person might know.
Yeah.
What would that be?
So the funny thing is, it's something that I did not know of myself until I was 7.
Okay.
So one night, I'm 7 years old, and I'm brushing my teeth, and I'm looking at myself in the mirror, and I go, holy crap, my two ears are not the same. Like, they're literally, like, they're the same. Like, if you look at me, you'll see it, but they're actually, if you look at the way the cartilage is sort of, they're different. They're actually fairly different. So the joke I sometimes say is like, well, depending on what, if you want to ask something, or tell my daughters, ask, depending on what side you ask it, I don't know, it may be heard differently, and you may get the wrong or right answer. Who knows if my left ear and my right ear generate the different sounds. But yeah,
when you ask someone to repeat a question, basically you will ask them to also move to the other
ear. Exactly, right? Or like, can I repeat the question, and I'll just turn my head. Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
Sounds good. Thanks a lot, Rafael, for sharing and sharing your B-side today with our audience. So thanks again, Rafael.
It was a pleasure.
And to all of our listeners, I'll see you next week with a new episode and a new guest on the podcast, and wishing you a great week until then. Have a great week. Bye-bye.